Okay, good morning. So we have about 40 minutes, and I think instead of me just presenting the slides and then having a question session, if you want to interrupt and ask questions, that's okay as well. So we're going to talk about glaucoma, and I'm going to try to go over the disease, what glaucoma is, and also talk about treatments for the disease. So, how common is glaucoma in the world? So, it's estimated that about 70 million people in the world have glaucoma, and about 10% have actually bilateral blindness from the disease. And that actually makes glaucoma a leading cause of irreversible blindness in the world. In African American people, it's actually the number one cause of blindness in the world. In Caucasians, is second only to macular degeneration. So what is glaucoma? Glaucoma is a progressive disease of the optic nerves, okay? And this damage to the optic nerves is frequently associated with a loss of visual function. That can result eventually in blindness. The pressure inside the eye, which is what we ophthalmologists call intraocular pressure, is the most important risk factor for the disease. If you have a high pressure, that increases your risk of getting damage to your nerves. So, this is an image of the eye. And as you see here, the pressure inside the eye will cause the damage to the structure here in the back, the optic nerve. And you can think of the optic nerve like a cable that will transmit the information from the eye to the brain. So the pressure in the eye can lead to damage to the optic nerve. And the pressure in the eye is the result of the accumulation of a liquid. We normally have a liquid inside the eye, it's a clear liquid called aqueous humor. This liquid is produced, so here is just a zoom. I zoomed this region here in the eye. This is the most superficial part of the eye that we call the cornea, the colored part, the iris, and the lens right here. So in the corner here, we have a production of this liquid called aqueous humor. And this liquid is continuously produced and drained from the eye. If the drainage becomes insufficient, then the liquid can accumulate and result in high pressure inside the eye, which can then damage the optic nerve. So the aqueous humor is produced, it circulates in the eye, nourishes the structures, and then returns to the bloodstream. So if it does not drain properly, the eye pressure can raise and damage the optic nerve. It's important to make sure the aqueous humor is distinct from the tears. Okay, so they're completely different things. It has nothing to, one thing has nothing to do with the other. The tear, the lacrimal system, the tears, they are found outside the eye and are produced and drained by a separate system. So how do we diagnose glaucoma? The most important component of the examination for glaucoma is to evaluate the optic nerve. As I just said, glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerves. So to diagnose glaucoma, we need to look at the nerves. And that is done in a routine ophthalmologic exam by dilating the pupils, so you get eye drops to dilate your pupils, and then the ophthalmologist looks at the back of your eye using high magnification lenses, like here. Then by using these magnification lenses, we can look at the back of your eye, the retina, and the optic nerve. And this is, in your left here, is an image of what we see when we look at the optic nerve. And we talk a lot about, like, you may have heard this, like your cup is enlarged. What do we mean by that? You can think of the optic nerve as the collection of all the nerve fibers in, from every point in the retina. The cells will send axons, which are like the cables transmitting the electrical signals. They will send it to this hole here, and the collection of these cables will form what we call the optic nerve. So all the cells from the retina, from the back of the eyes, they send these cables which will connect, which will form the optic nerve. The space here that is not occupied by nerve tissue is what we call the cup. And the space that is occupied by the nerve tissue is called the rim. So this is an optic nerve. Here we have the blood vessels. We have a rim and a cup. What happens with glaucoma? In glaucoma, what we have is a loss of the nerve tissue. As I said, this is the nerve tissue here. Okay, we have the nerve tissue here. So if you lose the nerve tissue, what's going to happen? The cup, which is the empty space here, will get larger. So this is an eye with glaucoma. You see that the cup is enlarged, as you see here, and you have less nerve tissue. So that's what we look for when we examine for glaucoma. We look at the nerves in order to detect signs of the disease and make a diagnosis. We can find sometimes that the nerve has little hemorrhages, which are a sign that the disease is uncontrolled. So the damage to the optic nerve may result in loss of vision, which usually starts in the periphery. So it's very important also to measure the peripheral vision, which is done by what we call visual field examination. This is what we call a perimeter, which is a machine that projects the light stimuli in the periphery, and the patient has to respond and tell whether he or she has been able to see the stimuli. So you press a button when you see the light. So this is just a representation of what happens with the vision as glaucoma progresses. So you have normal vision here, and as you start losing your peripheral vision, as you can see here, as glaucoma progresses, you start losing your peripheral vision from early glaucoma, advanced glaucoma, and end-stage disease. So in end-stage disease, patients get what we call a tunnel vision, where they can only see in the center. So they've lost most of the peripheral vision. But in early disease, they're frequently unaware of the symptoms. So the disease is frequently asymptomatic because the loss of the peripheral vision is not perceived by the patient. When we look at the visual field, we get what we call these dark areas, which are what we call scotomas. You see the black area here is an area that when we performed the visual field, the patient was not able to see the light. And these deficits of visual function may result in patients with glaucoma, for example, having over six times higher chance of being involved in a car accident, for example. They have also higher chance of falling as a result of the peripheral loss of vision. So I talked about evaluating the optic nerves, evaluating the visual fields. Although glaucoma causes a loss of the peripheral visual field, that sometimes happens only after you have lost about one third of your nerve tissue. Okay, so frequently the visual fields can actually remain normal even though you have substantial damage to the optic nerve. So therefore, to diagnose disease at an early stage, it's essential to examine the optic nerve. Even in developed countries, we have that fewer than 50% of those who have glaucoma are aware that they have the disease. And in the developing world, this rate is actually even lower. So you have about 80% of the patients with glaucoma, they don't even know that they have the disease. So it's very important to be aware of risk factors for the disease so that we can identify those patients who are at highest risk for developing glaucoma. So what are the main risk factors for the disease? I mentioned the pressure inside the eye, what we call intraocular pressure. If you have high pressure, you are at risk of developing glaucoma. Age, family history, and race. Let's go over each one of these. So, the pressure inside your eye is the main risk factor for glaucoma. So, as I mentioned before, if you have high pressure, then that can lead to damage to the nerves in the back of your eyes, to the optic nerves. How do we measure pressure? We measure pressure routinely using this device. That's the standard device that's used to measure the pressure. It's called Goldman tonometer. It's measured during routine ophthalmologic examinations. And we put eye drops to numb the eyes, and then we get the measurements by pressing slightly in the eye of the patient to get the readings of the pressure. Even though having high pressure puts you at risk for developing glaucoma, there are many patients that have apparently what we call high pressure, and they never develop the disease. Also, up to 40% of glaucoma patients are never really shown to have what we call high pressure. It's just that the pressure is high for that particular eye. They're probably more susceptible to developing the damage. So they develop the damage despite what apparently is a normal pressure. So if we just use pressure to diagnose the disease, we're going to miss the vast majority of patients with glaucoma. So just getting an eye pressure measurement, doing an eye examination, is not enough to diagnose glaucoma. Okay, we need to, it's important to get a dilated examination of the back of the eyes with an evaluation of the optic nerves. Just the eye pressure is not sufficient. Go ahead.
If somebody has just high pressure, would they be treated as glaucoma patient?
Not necessarily. If the pressure is too high, then that puts the patient at very high risk of eventually developing the disease. So when the pressure is very high, then we tend to treat. However, sometimes the pressure is high, but there's no evidence of any damage to the optic nerve. There's no evidence of damage to the nerves or to the visual fields. And in that case, we just monitor over time. We just monitor the patient and we look for change over time. Yes?
Does the pressure of the eye change from time to time within a given individual?
Yes, the pressure changes all the time. The pressure fluctuates a lot during the day. If we measure the pressure, and I'm going to actually discuss this a little bit more later. If we measure the pressure in the morning, afternoon, and at night, the pressure will be different It's like blood pressure. It tends to be higher when you're actually sleeping, when you're laying down, or in the early periods of the morning. And it also fluctuates from day to day. So that's why one measurement is really not enough.
Felipe, the after hypertensive treatment study, the first publication suggested there's about a 10% risk of conversion in 8 years, I think it was. But I think there's a subsequent publication that the risk keeps going up.
Right, yeah, it was, the first was 10% in 5 years. That was the first. Yeah, so if you had a high pressure, when we generally consider that the pressure is high when it's above what we call 21 millimeters of mercury, which is just the unit. So if you hear pressure is above 21, it's considered high, but not necessarily, as I said, we treat all of those with high pressure. But if, from the patients with pressure above 21, about 10% will develop the damage if followed for 5 years. But as Dr. Minkler mentioned, if you follow actually longer, the risk can increase. I think it's about the 18% or, yeah.
Closer to 20%.
Right.
I don't remember the number.
Exactly. But still, about 80% will not develop the damage even when followed for a relatively long period of time. So we do not treat everybody with high pressure. But if the pressure is very high, let's say 35, then we tend to treat most cases because the pressure is too high and the risk becomes too large. Okay?
There's also the issue of the number needed to treat or something that you have to treat, was it 20 people?
20 people. From the initial numbers, you had to treat 20 people to prevent one case.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Point yeah. To treat
but if you actually look at other risk factors for the disease, then you can actually improve that number quite a bit. For example, if you look at corneal thickness, for example, and I think I have some slides on this. This might be a little more complicated, but as I said, when we actually check the pressure, we have to press on the cornea, okay, which is the most superficial part of the eye here. We use this instrument and we press a little bit on the cornea to get the pressure, okay? So we flatten a little bit this surface to get the pressure. So, as you can imagine, if I have a cornea that is more resistant to this pressure, to the force that I'm applying here to get the pressure, if I have more resistance, that can influence the measurement that I'm going to get. So if I have, for example, a cornea, which is this most superficial structure, if it's too thick, I have to press harder to get the pressure measurement. So, and when that happens, I can overestimate the true pressure inside the eye. So if you have a thick cornea, which is something that you're just usually born with, or a thin cornea, you can actually, if you have a thick cornea, when we measure the pressure, we can overestimate the pressure measurement. So the pressure that we measure is actually higher than the true pressure the patient has inside the eye. Is that relatively clear? So sometimes you might go to an ophthalmologist and then you say, oh, your pressure is high, it's 23. Oh, but what's my corneal thickness? Oh, your corneas are very thick. So maybe it's high just because I'm overestimating the pressure with the measurement, but the true pressure inside your eye is actually lower than what I'm measuring. And that puts you at a lower risk for developing the disease. So then we might not even treat, as you just said. So in patients with thick corneas, then we can overestimate the pressure, and these patients would actually be at a lower risk for getting the disease.
Do you know right away if the cornea is thick or thin?
We can measure that. There's an instrument that we can use based on ultrasound that we can use to measure the thickness of the cornea, and that should be a routine part of the evaluation for glaucoma. Because the thickness of the cornea can influence the pressure measurement.
The air pop test have a similar artifact?
Yes, it does. Yes, it has a similar artifact. So, glaucoma is a disease of aging, and the prevalence of the disease increases sharply as you get older. But it's very important when also considering how aggressive we need to be when treating the disease, it's very important to consider other things. For example, life expectancy. Glaucoma can be a symptomatic disease for a long time. So depending on the life expectancy of the patient, we'll take that into consideration in order to decide whether we're going to treat and how aggressive we're going to be with treatment.
Doctor,
yes.
Can I go back to that one graph?
Of course. So, what we see here is in African descent, you have a linear increase of the prevalence of the disease with aging, and it's always higher than in Asians and European descent. But it tends to grow exponentially in European descent over time.
Is it linked to diet or hereditary?
We don't really know exactly what explains this difference. We have, at UCSD, we have a very large study that it's called the African Descent with Glaucoma Evaluation Study, ADAGES. And this is a study that we have been doing that has enrolled about 3,000 patients, African descent and European descent, and we are comparing their differences as we follow them with the disease to see if we can identify reasons that could explain these differences.
And whether it's genetics or
physical. Exactly, genetics or exactly all the factors that could explain this. What we know that is interesting is that African Americans, they have thinner corneas, okay? And as I just mentioned to you, if you have thinner corneas, you could be at a higher risk of developing the disease. So this is something that has already been shown as being associated with these differences between African Americans and Caucasians.
They also have larger discs.
They do have larger, yeah, exactly. They do have larger optic nerves, which could perhaps put them as an increased susceptibility to developing the disease. How about family history? If you have a first degree relative with glaucoma, you have about 8 to 10 times higher chance of developing the disease. Okay, so this is a very important thing to keep in mind. So if you have glaucoma, you need to tell your relatives to get examined for the disease. So we mentioned race already, so there's a higher prevalence of glaucoma in blacks, and the disease is usually more severe and tends to occur earlier in this racial group. So it tends to be more aggressive in African Americans. How about diabetes and systemic hypertension, high blood pressure? Diabetes and high blood pressure, are they risk factors for the disease? At this point, there's no conclusive evidence relating diabetes to glaucoma. This is something that in the past, people used to think that diabetes was an important risk factor for glaucoma, but actually the vast majority of studies have not been able to confirm that. So at this point, there's really no conclusive evidence linking diabetes to the risk for glaucoma. And the relationship between high blood pressure and risk for glaucoma is also unclear at this point. What about diet? Is there any particular food that will increase the risk for glaucoma? Or is there anything that you eat that could help you prevent glaucoma? So different from macular degeneration, where there's some evidence that certain particular vitamins could actually decrease your risk of getting macular degeneration. At this point, we don't have much evidence linking diet to glaucoma. Okay, so a common question that I get from patients is there anything that I can do in my daily life to help decrease the risk for the disease? And there's not much evidence for that. And do you give any particular recommendation?
I don't see any harm in recommending
the microdegeneration vitamins. That's what I say. It's I'm taking the vitamins. Yeah, they haven't really been linking, like showing to be protective for glaucoma, but again, they're not going to be harmful. And exercise has been, there are some studies suggesting that exercise can lower your pressure, and it's a good thing to do anyway.
How about acupuncture?
That's a good question. There are no large studies showing a benefit of acupuncture, but maybe it's because nobody has done them yet, done the appropriate studies actually to show that. Okay?
Does smoking increase your chance of glaucoma?
No, apparently, no, it's not. There's no real relationship, no. There's also an unclear relationship with coffee. There's some studies suggesting that if you drink too much coffee, your pressure could actually go up. But even if there is an effect, the effect is likely to be actually small and perhaps not really clinically relevant. Go ahead.
Some literature emphasize that glaucoma is a disease of tension.
You mean stress?
Stress.
Okay, so different than blood pressure, the eye pressure does not really respond clearly to stress like blood pressure. Okay, so there's not a clear relationship like that, like with blood pressure. Blood pressure, you clearly see that relationship, but that's not really the same with eye pressure. Okay, so I can't tell you that whether if you have a more stressful life, whether because it affects so many things in your body that could maybe have an effect. But what I can tell you is certainly there's not a clear-cut relationship with stress and eye pressure like you see with blood pressure.
And so do factors like getting ultraviolet light in your eyes, does that
getting what?
Like getting too much sunlight in your eyes, like ultraviolet light in your eyes?
No, that's for macular degeneration. Yeah, yeah. Okay, but no, not for glaucoma.
Yeah. So leave the acupuncture to work. You put the needle into the eye.
Right, yeah, slowly getting the liquid out of the eye.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
There are many different, this is one thing that is, I think it's worth mentioning. If you go to the internet, you're going to see many different studies that propose different forms of treatment. But when these forms of treatment, they're actually put under like heavy testing with appropriate studies, they're well-controlled studies, they usually, then they do not show any benefit. Okay, so you can see many, you can find studies showing different forms that might be helpful, different types of products, but actually when they're put into like really to with appropriate studies, then usually they're shown to have no benefit. One thing that is emerging right now that is interesting is a compound that is found in the red wine called resveratrol that has been, there's a lot of research going on about this compound, and it seems to be a compound that is what we call neuroprotective. So it prevents your nerve cells from getting damaged. And there's a lot of studies in many different areas of neurosciences, and studies are ongoing with glaucoma. There are experimental studies showing that actually, if you put your nerve cells If you actually cultivate the nerve cells with resveratrol, they seem to be more resistant to the effects of pressure compared to cells that have no resveratrol. So perhaps drinking red wine will also help you with glaucoma.
I like downsized if you end up with a little buggy and sleeping out on the
right
peg someplace.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. Well, but yeah, if you drink like one or two glasses a day, that will actually decrease your risk for cardiac diseases. And there's evidence emerging that it could also help you perhaps with glaucoma. But this is only it's only starting at this point. There's nothing really I can tell you. There's nothing really proven yet that this will be beneficial in the long term for humans.
But just red wine?
Red wine, yes. Yeah, red wine. Yes, red wine. So it's a component that is found in the red wine called resveratrol. You can actually found it. You can find it in pharmaceutical preparations. You can buy pills, but apparently the effect is not as good as if you actually drink it. If you actually have it in the wine. And do you take it?
Oh, no, just I drink a lot of wine, but and actually alcohol lowers high pressure. I mean, it's a diuretic, so
you can. Right, that's another. Yeah.
We used to
say, well, we don't want to.
You know, after laser trabeculoplasty, you sometimes get a pressure spike.
So okay, so where's our sin?
We would send people out for a couple of martinis, and the pressure spike was always going.
What is that first picture?
This is just the grapes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Question, does eating grapes have the same effect as drinking red wine?
Probably you would have to eat too much, and then you would get diabetes from the sugar. That's it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, right now, we don't have a very good way of screening for glaucoma. In the population. The way that we detect the disease is usually what we call opportunistic case finding. So as a patient goes for a routine eye examination or for some other reason to the ophthalmologist, then he has an appropriate dilated examination with pupils dilated. We look at the optic nerves and the pressure and then visual fields, and then we diagnose the disease. But a good way to actually screen for the disease in the general population is to always make sure to refer family members of patients with glaucoma to have a complete eye exam. Okay, it's really amazing how many patients we see that they have glaucoma, but they're really not aware of this relationship. So their family members have never really been examined for the disease. So how do we treat glaucoma? Lowering the eye pressure is the only proven way to treat glaucoma at this point. Okay, it's to lower the eye pressure, and we know that lowering the pressure in the eye, we can usually slow down the disease progression. The damage that you get from glaucoma is not reversible. You cannot reverse the nerve damage that you got from the disease, but you can slow it down so that it remains stable. And we usually start treatment with medical therapy, with eye drops to lower the pressure. And these eye drops, they act by decreasing the production of that liquid I told you about, the aqueous humor, or also increasing the drainage of the liquid. So they can decrease the production or increase the drainage. And that lowers the pressure. We have many different types of eye drops. A class that is usually used as a first line of treatment is what we call prostaglandin analogs. We have a different commercially available preparations for this. You might be familiar with this. They increase the drainage of the liquid, and that lowers the pressure. They're the most effective drops to lower the eye pressure with very few local and systemic side effects. Some local side effects are redness. some discomfort that can eventually happen. These class of medication, the prostaglandin analogs, they have an interesting side effect, which is they can sometimes increase, they can darken the color of the eyes, as you see here. Especially in this mixed color eyes, like green, brownish, then they can actually darken. And you can get an increase in the number and thickness of the eyelashes, as you see here. And they're now commercializing certain preparations of these drugs to actually, just with this indication, to actually get better looking eyelashes. It's called Latisse, and it's commercially available. And it's based on, it was based on a side effect from these eye drops.
How is the drainage being increased?
Okay. This is a relatively complex thing. There's a remodeling. With these type of medication, there is a remodeling of what we call extracellular matrix. You can think of it as the liquid has to pass through some tissues. It makes the tissue more loose, so the liquid can just go through it by remodeling that tissue. Is that relatively clear? So we have other type of medications called the beta blockers. They decrease the production of liquid. They're effective, but not as much as the prostaglandin analogs, and they can have important systemic side effects. They are contraindicated if you have a history of asthma, bronchitis, if you have a irregular heart beating, and they can have some other side effects such as impotence and depression. At UCSD, we have conducted some studies, and this goes back to the question you asked me about fluctuation of pressures. Pressures fluctuate all the time, so we have been doing some studies there that we house the patients in apartments like this, where they can use computer, cook, and they have a bed here, and we check the pressure every 2 hours to see how the eye drops work in lowering the pressure over the 24-hour period. And what we have found in these studies is that the pressures fluctuate a lot over time. They tend to be higher. You see this squares here, that it goes up at the nocturnal, the sleep period here, like by 3:30, 5:30, when the patient's actually laying down, is when you have highest pressures. And we have compared the effects of these different medications. And the prostaglandin analogs, the first class that I mentioned, they are the most effective in lowering the pressure at night. Another class of medication is called the alpha adrenergic agonists, which is represented commercially by the ALF again. It's usually employed as a combination therapy. It's very frequent that your one eye drop is not going to be enough to lower the pressure. We sometimes need to add more eye drops. Okay, we start with one, and then if that doesn't lower the pressure enough, we go to another one, and we frequently have to combine eye drops. And we have another class that we can use as a combination therapy, which is called the carbonic anhydrase inhibitors. So it's very important to be aware of systemic side effects. It's not rare to see patients, they're using the beta blockers that I mentioned to you and have a history of asthma. And they can get worse from the symptoms of asthma with that. So it's very important to be aware of some systemic side effects of eye drops. And it's very important to emphasize the importance of compliance, of using the eye drops as prescribed on a daily basis. Because if you stop using the eye drops, the pressure goes up again. There's no cure for the high pressure. We can only lower it with the treatment. But once you stop treatment, the pressure will go up again.
Just as another emphasis on that same point, in the way back in the first literature on Timolol, there were 30 deaths that were clearly attributed to the use of that drug in the first 30 million prescriptions. So it actually has the ability in the appropriate patients to cause terrible problems. They're all either cardiac or respiratory problems.
That's true, yeah.
If you have asthma or a slow, irregular heart, you shouldn't be on these drugs.
Exactly, yes. So if the eye drops don't work to lower the pressure, or they don't lower the pressure enough, or sometimes the patients cannot tolerate eye drops, we can move on to other forms of treatment, such as laser. There's a procedure called laser trabeculoplasty that is done to lower the pressure. What do we do with this laser? We focus the laser to the drainage area where the liquid drains from the eye, and we apply the laser to that area to increase the filtration. It's an effective and very safe treatment to lower the pressure, but it may lose some of the effect over time. It has very few side effects, just a transient blurry vision, but it's pretty much a harmless procedure. It's a very safe procedure that can be done. It takes just a few minutes, can be done in the office, doesn't require any special preparation. We apply the laser to the corner of the eye, to the angle, it's where the filtration occurs, and that usually results in lowering of the pressure. If the pressure cannot be lowered with medications or laser, then we can go for surgery, and I'm just gonna mention this briefly, as Dr. Minkler is gonna go over that. So, surgery can usually result in very effective lowering of the pressure. You can get the pressure to very low levels. However, like any surgery, there are some risks. The surgery can be done with local anesthesia, and the surgery has evolved over time in order to improve the success.
What do you do in this surgery?
Okay, what do we do in the surgery? I'll show it to you. What do we do in the surgery? We create a little opening in the eye, and I'm not going to cover this in much detail because Dr. Minkler is going to go over that. Yeah, we create a little opening, put a little hole in the eye that enables the liquid that is causing the pressure to go out, but the liquid stays underneath this white tissue here. That's what we call conjunctiva. Okay? So the liquid goes out through a hole in the sclera, which is this white tissue here, it's called the sclera, this. Okay, you have the cornea, the sclera. So we make an opening there, so the liquid can go out, but it remains underneath the conjunctiva and causes this elevation here that we call the bleb. So patients with glaucoma who had the surgery called trabeculectomy, they will have this called bleb, okay, which is an elevation as the result of the liquid here. From here, the liquid is just absorbed to the bloodstream. Okay, so this is a very effective procedure to lower your pressure. However, as you can imagine, we punch a hole in the eye, and that is an area of susceptibility to get potentially to close, and the surgery can fail. Or you could also have bacteria or some microorganism that could get access to inside of the eye, and that could cause a serious infection. So it is a very effective procedure, but it has potential risks. So you need to be very careful when you make the decision to treat with surgery. In the patients who had glaucoma surgery, this type of surgery, trabeculectomy, they should seek immediate care if they have pain, blurry vision, or redness. They are at a long-term risk of infection. So just some take-home messages. Glaucoma is leading cause of blindness in the world. As risk factors, we have those subjects, older subjects, African descent, and positive family history. They are at higher risk of developing the disease. A simple screening method that can be done by anyone is just to refer relatives with glaucoma to have a complete eye exam. And by that, I mean a dilated exam that involves evaluation of the nerves in the back of the eye, the optic nerves. Just checking the pressure is not enough. We need to be aware of potential systemic side effects of eye drops, especially the beta blockers. Beta blockers can be effective in lowering the pressure, but we have to be careful in patients with certain conditions such as asthma or bronchitis or heart disease. Patients who had glaucoma surgery, trabeculectomy, they will be always at an increased risk for eye infection. So anytime they develop pain in the eye or redness, they should not wait. They should go and seek treatment as soon as possible. Thank you.